Everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of Hey Man, It's Okay. I'm Sky Bridges, one of your hosts through this journey today.
And hello, everybody. My name is Ryan Heapy. I'm your other host. I'm also a licensed therapist out of California and really excited about today's guest. He has a very similar journey, just maybe fast forwarded a few years as I have. So I'm looking forward to getting to hear maybe what my future self may manifest into. Sky, tell us a little bit about who we got.
Yeah, we're all at different places at in our mental health journey, and the best thing to do is to learn from experience. So if you learn, hopefully you're there to be able to pass on that information to the next generation so that maybe, you know, they don't have to go through things as hard as you had to go through them. And if you're willing to share that, I think that's just so magic and beautiful. And today we have a guest who I think is going to be really great to pass that information on to us and to you guys as well. Author of the bi-weekly newsletter, Your Next Chapter, we have Mark Wigginton. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I have to say, this is one of those really weird internet things where you guys are, in my mind, are internet famous, right? So I know you and your stories, and from listening to your podcasts, I'm really excited to have a chance to share my story with you and with your guests or with your audience as well.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to hear from you about your story. But, and also, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I think that's so cool. A lot of people don't know, don't do their research, but you told us before you've got like a lot of pages of notes that we could go into today.
OCD.
Yeah. But I think that's great. But yeah, why don't you tell us and our audience a little bit about you and why we're here? And then let's just talk.
Yeah, good. So I want to say, I think the work that you guys are doing, and Sky, particularly, I want to commend you because from what I've learned about you guys, this is really your passion project, men's mental health, particularly suicide prevention. And Ryan, I know your story as well and the experience that you had. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us have the common experience of understanding how important men's mental health is right now and the crisis that we're really seeing between loneliness. And Sky, you already said we're in different demographics, a millennial, a boomer, and a Gen Z are all together on this call. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that challenge of men's mental health goes across that spectrum. People talk a lot about the fact that mental health for young people, for young men in particular, is four times the rate of women, right? 80% of the people who commit suicide are men. Guess what? By the time you get to 75, that number is 10x. So that it's something that continues across the lifespan. So thank you for the work that you're doing in making a form like this available for people to learn the lessons.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. That really means a lot coming from you. And it makes me feel really good about the message and to help us keep pushing forward for sure.
I also really want to second that, Sky. You have really been the driving force behind this podcast and made me keep showing up week after week, really put the bulk of the amount of work behind it. And just even to have somebody like Mark on, listen to the podcast, even get the smallest amount out of it, truly a tribute to you, Sky.
You guys, I'm blushing.
Really. And all this work.
Yeah. So, thank you so much. It really means so much to hear that from both of you because, you know, where you guys are both at in your life, I truly respect you and it makes me feel like I'm learning a lot. So thank you. I appreciate it.
So I just want to add one more thing to the adding of, but the importance of podcasts for men's mental health, particularly for young men in the younger demographic, it's just now starting to be studied. And there was a study that came out of the UK. It's like a 2023 study. It was the first real kind of deep study that looked at this and understood and quantified the impact with action steps based on the results that are happening, particularly in that kind of 20 to 35 age demographic of people being able to really connect and identify with the struggles that other people have and know that they're not alone. And again, back to your whole topic, hey man, it's okay, which is understanding that. So just again, to validate what it is that you're doing, it's being studied. In fact, I'm working, I live in Austin, but I'm working with someone over in College Station at Texas A&M that we're going to start trying to expand that study a little bit and try to see if we can replicate it here.
Wow, that's really cool. And I guess I don't take the time to maybe realize how great an impact podcasts have made on my life, like shaping my mental health, my physical health, the influencers that I listen to, that I use as motivation, as accountability, or new research, new ideas. But yeah, when I was really going through my deep, dark time, I don't think I had anybody. Now that I think about it, this medium really wasn't there in the same way. And I wonder if my journey would be different if it had. So
I can tell you that this medium was available when I went through my dark time. And if you don't see it as a resource and an option, then no, I can tell you that it's not going to make any difference if it's not something listening to podcasts. I didn't listen to podcasts for a long time. And then it was like, got into a comedy one, then got into mental health ones, and I just got hooked. So it really, I think it probably just depends on if you're looking for it or not, you will find it.
So Mark, tell us a little bit about this amazing journey, this arc. There were some things that you did in your career that I've really wanted to do. Really, when I first got into this, I wanted to work in prisons. And so I really take my hat off to anybody who's willing to, probably not for a great amount of money, really put themselves in a position where you're making real impact, I think, with the people who truly need it the most.
Yeah, I would love to share that story because it's such a fundamental part of my journey. And so just to bring everybody up to speed, I went to high school, I went to college, I dropped out after a year, I went into the Air Force. I was having my first really pronounced round of depression during that time. Went in active duty in the Air Force, realized pretty quickly that I made a mistake and that I really wasn't, even after I'd gone to military school and all that, I really wasn't meant to be there, and found a way to get back to college. I went back, got my bachelor's degree in psychology. And when I came out, I worked at night in a lock psych ward. And in the daytime, I worked as a trainer for a contract trainer for a telecommunications company, for one of the first companies out of Silicon Valley. And I moved forward in that career in my 20s and throughout my 20s into a technical role and then into a sales role. And then I hit a bottom or I hit a wall. And at 30, I went to rehab. Ryan, my experience was different than yours. I had a really positive experience in rehab. It really reframed me, reshaped me. And I came out and decided I wanted to do something different. And I went back to school, got a master's degree in counseling psychology, and got my license as a licensed professional counselor. So this is the 90s. This is in my early 30s. And I've maintained my license all the way through the arc of my career, even after I went back to business. So I worked in a couple of rehab centers as an aftercare counselor, and I did groups all over town. And I finally got an opportunity to work as a counselor at the Travis County Jail. And I worked in the men's unit, and it was a real eye-opening experience for a middle-class kid to go work in a county jail. I learned a lot. And again, there were a lot of innovations that were happening in treatment back in those days. I worked in the jail, in a unit, and that lock unit was actually a drug rehab center. So not the most motivated people in the world to be there, but they found that they got some extra privileges. But again, I really felt like we had some impact working with them. We also had a really pilot program that was funded by the VA with brainwave biofeedback, EEG biofeedback, where we were doing very rudimentary pioneer work in helping people regulate their emotional state and their cravings with biofeedback, so that they were like, if they were somebody who was an opiate user or an alcoholic, we would help them learn how to stimulate a part of their brain that was too sleepy. And if they were an amphetamine or cocaine addict, we would learn how to slow that part of their brain down. So it was a really powerful experience. But the most powerful experience that came out of that was about a year into it, Travis County started a boot camp program. So I would work inside with men, and then I would work outside with young men, 16 to 20 people who they were trying to divert. And it was such a powerful experience for me because literally I'd have group inside and I'd have these guys that talked about the loss of relationship that they had with their sons and with their nephews and with their brothers. And then I'd go outside and I'd have a group with their sons and their nephews and their brothers. And they would talk about how lost their relationship was with the father figure that was inside. It was something that really opened my eyes, even back then, to the importance of mental health and to the legacy of issues that we have to deal with as we go through. So I'll also say that in my life story, so my parents were got married very young. So, you know, my mother was pregnant at 18. She had me at 19, and she was single by the time she was 20. So I basically say I bounced off my father. A few times in my life, I had seen him. And after my experience working at the jail, I wrote him a letter and I told him what I just told you guys about the two groups. And I said, I'm one of those people. If you're the other, let me know. And about 10 days later, he showed up at my door and we had a relationship for the last 30 years of his life.
Wow.
So it was this really super powerful, life-changing thing to work at the jail.
Unbelievable. But that you took that experience and decided to take it on yourself.
Yeah, it really opened my eyes. And I realized for years, I wouldn't acknowledge that I had any kind of loss in the fact that I didn't have a really stable male figure in my life. And I would jokingly say I was raised by a pack of she-wolves. It's like my mother and my aunt and my grandmother. And I didn't have that stability. And so I grew up in the same way that a lot of young people are today, with that same kind of loneliness and isolation. I went to 10 schools before the 10th grade. We were constantly moving. There was a lot going on. And I went through a lot of the same kind of struggles, I think, that lead to the loneliness. Except, of course, it's all amped up by social media and a lot of different factors than were available in the 1960s, what I'm talking about. But still, understanding that sense of loneliness that can lead to someone making a decision to end their life or making their decision to do to cope with an unhealthy coping skill. How's that?
How old were you when he reconnected, and what was that reconnection like?
I was in my 30s, so I was probably 30, maybe 34, 33 or 34, around there. And again, he came down, and we had a legit conversation. And he had two children in his second marriage, and he invited me to come up to his daughter's wedding, my half sister's wedding. And we started our relationship, and it was never super close throughout our time together, but at least we had a relationship and we both worked on it to try to make it happen. We both struggled with that. It's not easy. But it was something that became very important. And then again, towards the end of his life, we had some really serious conversations about regret on both sides of the table. Particularly, I heard a lot of regret from his life experience.
You still have any sort of relationship with your half-siblings?
It's funny that you asked that, Sky, because our relationship got so much stronger. We went through this crazy period of time together that in 99 days, so my mother had Alzheimer's disease and she had been ill for a long time. She and her husband had moved here to Austin so that we could be closer and support them. But when she died, it was very sudden. She fell, and within a matter of days, she was dead. And 99 days later, so like right after that, 99 days later, my father died. And there was a period of time when I went up there to be with my half siblings. In the middle of that, their mother died. So we were going through this whole thing together at the same time. My mother died in April, their mother died in May, and then our father died at the very beginning of August. So it brought us closer together in a way that we never had been. It's almost like we were spokes. He was the hub of the wheel and we were spokes. So I would always go there, not like they never came here, but I would always go up there and there would usually be an event and we would spend some time together and I would be spending time with Jack, with my father. And so I would see them on the periphery, but it really brought us together as a unit as we went through this experience together of we had different moms, but we were both going through that experience of losing both our parents. So it really, and it continues. It continues in a way. They were so warm and generous in including photos of me and their mother's memorial. And then all of us together were working through the process of dealing with Jack, and it was a really powerful time.
Wow. Yeah, just remarkable.
What do you think were some of the big takeaways that you learned either about fatherhood, about mentorship, both in your own journey, but also getting to work with fathers and sons who have lost their relationships, who have, and yet are still alive, but not there?
It's a hard one. The thing that was so eye-opening, Ryan, was the power, the cross-generational power. And being in a jail is a pretty tough situation. And generally, you're not in a place where you're showing any weakness. And for these men to honor me, like we go to group or we do whatever, for them to honor me and honor each other with the humility to say, I wish I had done something differently. I wish I could have a relationship with my son. I wish I could have a relationship with my uncle, was a really powerful thing. And then to see the anger in the young men, right? Then older, the adults were filled with grief. And the young men were filled with anger, right? About these relationships that they had. I think that was one of the most important things. And that's what my point was. I'm pissed off and I'm the guy, I'm one of them. I'm the guy that's pissed off. Mm-hmm. And if you're the other one, let's chat. And if not, F you. It was, that's where we were with it. And I was fine with whatever the answer was. That was one of the important things about seeing the difference of anger and grief in that situation. One of the other things that was really powerful for me was the experience of watching some of these young men who were trying to break that cycle. They might be 17 or 18 or 19, and maybe they had already had a kid. And, you know, maybe they were in trouble because, let's just be frank, right? They could go work at McDonald's at that point. They could go work at McDonald's and make $8 an hour, or they could sling crack and make $200 a day. And so in their value system, they would see that they could be more supportive in coping in an ineffective way and using their skill in an ineffective way. And one of the things that I tried to do was really talk about, again, this is the 90s. So talk about things like FUBU and talk about rap artists and hip hop artists that were coming from there and finding a way to rechannel that energy in a more positive way. So that was another thing that was really one of the things that I learned was the importance of kind of not forcing my values and understanding that, you know, that my values were maybe different because of how I was raised and then their experience was, but that many of them were committed to doing the right thing.
Yeah. And I think one of the most powerful things as therapists as we can do is have the ultimate form of empathy where there is no judgment in most people's choices. And I've never had a client, I'm sure even in jail, you probably didn't, who intentionally felt that their next decision was going to be completely devastating for the rest of their lives or anything like that. So many of us have one bad move and it completely changes the trajectory of our lives.
Absolutely. And one of the key messages that I talk about with people is the importance of acceptance, right? Acceptance of where you are today in order to make the change that you want to make. You can't go, oh my God, I wish it was this way. You have to accept the reality of where it is today if you want to make the change. And an understanding that, like you just said, people can really screw up. People who are in jail have screwed up. And something's happened that was an ineffective coping skill. And what happens is that if they make a decision that they can accept, it's not all going to be sunshine and lollipops, but there's a way to make changes. And that's something that happened in my own life. We're talking here about this window of time where I was working on all these rehab centers and working all this. But when pressure got really hard on me, when it got to a place where, you know, we were no longer able to pay our mortgage and I got overwhelmed by that stress, I relapsed. And when I relapsed, like hard, and I went out. And here's the guy who's been for 7 years helping people change their lives. And I didn't own it for myself. I couldn't accept it for myself. And it led me, as you just said, there's a turning point, right? And it led me on a really long, crazy journey for the next 8 years of my life. And that came back to the fact that I couldn't accept the fact that I wasn't perfect. I think that's one of the things as men, we all struggle with is perfectionism. And I couldn't accept it. I couldn't face the people that would be willing to help me and change. And so I did a 180 on my life and went off in a totally different tangent, totally different direction.
But what do you think? Go for it, Sky.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, it's funny because I feel like in my journey right now, I'm going through these times where I'm realizing that some of the beliefs that I held when I was younger aren't true. And I feel like hearing you say what you said, I feel like I'm like in the middle of maturing because I'm angry, but I'm also really sad for what I went through.
Yeah.
And so it's so funny to hear that's the experience, that you can tell the difference between the two types. And I just really appreciate you sharing all that.
And Sky, the thing is, that's so normal and natural. One of the things that I talk about in my practice and working with people who are in midlife is helping them understand what transition really looks like, right? And so there are really three phases of it. And no one's going to change unless stuff is so bad that things that aren't working, they're going to be forced into change. Very few people go, I'm going to change my life because everything's sunshine and lollipops, so I'm going to do something new. You have to hit a wall, right? And so you have to get to an ending. And you get to an ending, and then you go into this big, messy middle, this real liminal space where it is just a big bunch of feelings and ideas, and what do I want to do next? And you try to sort it out. And that takes time, right? Some of the studies say that they can take 5 years to get through a major life change, to work your way through the messy middle and come out to the new beginning where you now have processed the information. You've processed everything that you were feeling and dealing with and written about in your anger and your feelings, and what are your next steps and what have you learned along the way? And you're at a place where then you start again, right? And you start again. And the problem is that we have so much information and there's so much happening that these cycles keep happening. It's not like you do a change, you work through the process and you start anew. And it's like you do a change and then a month later, another change starts, and then another one starts right after that. So you're like constantly in this big mess of feelings and trying to figure out your next step. So you're right where you need to be and not alone.
How can you manage that though without feeling so overwhelmed by all of the emotions that come with all of these challenges? How do they not overwhelm everything that you are?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And again, back to coping skills, right? You have a set of coping skills that work until they don't anymore. When I was 15, I started drinking because I was so overstimulated. I had so much hypervigilance and just so much going on in my life. Once I found alcohol, I was able to tone it down. And that worked until it didn't. That worked until I bumped into the first thing when I went to rehab. And then I went back out. And then after 7 years of working on it, it didn't work anymore. The pressure was greater. And I went back out and I used those ineffective coping skills again until I really, really hit a wall. 8 years after the relapse, I wound up with a DWI while I was working as a consultant and on the side of the road going, how the heck did I get here? And I had to find a new set of coping skills, and did. And I did that work with other people. I had a male therapist, his name was Steve. And Steve taught me one important lesson in all my time that I worked with him. It was that you're doing okay, except when you're not. The foundation is that you're doing okay. You're doing okay, except when you're not. And that gave me the starting to be able to say, maybe I can get through this. And then I learned a new set of coping skills. And it's some of that had to do with changing my physical condition. I lost a bunch of weight and I started running. I got maybe a little too compulsive into that because I wound up running marathons and then I wound up doing triathlons and all these things that really changed my scope, my coping skill, but they also gave me a more effective way to silence that overstimulation. I spend a lot of time by myself running on the side of the road when I train for a marathon, or when you're slow and it takes you 5 hours to run 26 miles, you spend a lot of time in your head working through the process. So for me, it was finding a coping skill that then matched where I was in my life. And that's the deal. You're not going to change your coping skills when they work for you. And then when you go from there, it's like this, one of the things that's really cool about this exploration that I'm doing in my life now is I look back at the things that have happened, and I work at coaching and I have a therapist that I've been working with through my grief and all the different things with my losses, is understanding some of the things that have changed in the 30 years since I worked at the jail, since I worked in that community. One of the most important things is the harm reduction model, right? That is what Steve told me 30 years ago, right? You do okay, except when you don't, right? And then you start again. So instead of everything having to be perfect, instead of us having as men to look at everything in our life as just being, we have to be perfect. And if we screw up, we are a screw up. We have the ability to adapt. That gift of understanding that model of harm reduction and doing the best I can today has been something that's really empowered me in these last couple of years since I went through that major life change to really see myself through different eyes. I think I'm rambling. I'm sorry.
That's okay. And so, Mark, when did you start running?
I was about 45. I weighed 225 pounds. Wow. I was about 50 pounds heavier than I am now.
And then it hit a peak of, you didn't hire me at 55?
Yeah. Wow. At 55. And
impressive.
What is an Ironman again?
An Ironman triathlon is, first off, I learned how to swim when I was 49 and I made it a goal that I was going to learn how to swim before I was 50. So now 5 years later, I swam in 2.4 miles in open water. And then I got out and rode 112 miles on my bike. And then I ran a 26.2 mile marathon. And it took me 17 hours from 7 a.m. to midnight. I used every single minute that was allocated to the time. And I tried once and wasn't successful. And then the second, and then I took 2 years to regroup and be successful at it.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
It's just anybody who can do that period is just mind blowing that you can be actively moving that hard, that long for that amount of time. It's just fascinating. And then to do it.
That whole process of learning of endurance training was something that, again, really changed my life. And it became a coping skill because I was performing in a very different way. I was never going to win. Like they set you up in age groups, right? And so if there were 10 guys in my age group, I'd be seventh. If there were 100 guys, I'd be 70th. That's what it was going to be, right? And if it was a half marathon or a full marathon or whatever, I was going to be in the bottom third, no matter what. And so coming to accept that meant that I wasn't going to be perfect and I wasn't going to win. And that made this major change in my life. But again, it was about this. It's the funniest thing because it's like this movement stopped my movement. I told you that I had this. I went to 10 schools before the 10th grade. What I didn't say is that in that window from 30 to 45, I had 20 different jobs. In that 15-year window, when I was working part of the time in community mental health, and then I went back into the business world, I couldn't stay stable at work. I had 20 different jobs. And then triathlon and running in those 2 years helped me learn to be stable. And from the time I was 47, so the end of that window, to the time I left full-time work at 62, I had one job. So I literally, in the 30-year window, went back to back 20 jobs in 15 years to one job in 15 years by learning how to manage my emotional state and learning how to become more present and use more effective coping skills.
Being able to sit in uncomfortable feelings, I think, is one of the greatest skills that we can ever acquire, because it's that uncomfortability that we reach out and do those rather self-destructing things.
Especially if those emotions come up in front of other people.
Oh, yes.
Because that can be debilitating. That can make you not want to feel. We all think that feelings are something that can be controlled and they just can't. Right. And it's so unhealthy. It's good to get them out there and sit in them.
So Mark, now you have a new career venture, and that is, you really have an amazing resume when it comes to helping to coaching others. You've got the psych background, you've got the relationship background, you've got the career background, you've got the physical down, and now you're at this age and helping people like me prepare themselves for this next step. Tell us a little bit about that.
And so it's totally a result of transitions, right? So when I left full-time work at the end of 22, because it became really visible after COVID, how quickly my mother's Alzheimer's disease was progressing. And I felt like I needed to leave full-time work so that I could be more supportive of her. And so my intent when I left full-time work, Ryan, was to be a sales coach. I was literally working towards that. And that was, I had a good, strong network after all this time in my professional career. And was moving towards that. And in fact, the day that she fell, at that afternoon, I had done a presentation for a group of coaches, talking to them about how to promote themselves and how to sell themselves more effectively. And so I was on this cloud nine, the pink cloud of, oh my God, I made it work. And everything is going to be amazing. And we're going to make even more money and be more this and more powerful and more that. And then that afternoon she fell and it was like, holy crap, my life changed. Like literally in a minute, right? My life changed. And going through that next 100 days led me to a pretty deep depression, right? It led me to a pretty deep place of how do I cope? How do I deal with this? And coming out of that, I began to do this deep search, all this introspection that I'm doing now, of looking at my life, looking at the chapters, looking at the lessons that I've learned, learning about transition, learning at a deeper level. I studied transition in school. And part of what I did when I did the million jobs was I did career coaching and things like that. But I learned it at a deep level. And so I came out of that saying, I don't care about that anymore. I don't care about the sales stuff. And I use the sales stuff to help people with their careers. But what I decided, my purpose was really to help people understand midlife transition and figure out what their next step was going to be. Huh. For most people, their midlife transition means let's figure out what's going to happen next at work. So that led me to really focus on career coaching and use all of these tools together to help people figure out what their next chapter is in their business life. And then as we work together, I've been very clear with them that I'm not a therapist in that situation, but that influences how I communicate with them. So a lot of times we get into a lot deeper issues about what's going on with them, but I do a lot of work with entrepreneurs, a lot of work with people coming out of the military who are trying to figure out what they're going to do in the civilian life. You can't believe the amount of people that I'm working with that are coming out of the federal workspace right now that were. There's all the verbs, right? They were doged or they were forked or whatever. But just helping them. Yeah. These are people who thought they had a job for the rest of their life. And now they're having to sort it all out and they're 45 or 50.
That's really scary.
And so what do you think someone in that position or even me thinking about this next chapter, what are some of the things we should be considering, evaluating, taking on?
So when I work with folks, the starting point is always looking at their strengths. And so many of us are blind to our strengths. And I'm as guilty as that as anybody, as being blind to my strengths. I use a tool, the Values in Action Questionnaire. I don't know if you know the VIA tool or not, but it comes out of the Positive Psychology School. It comes out of the work that was done by the guys in the University of Pennsylvania. And it's like a self-assessment. And you have 24 character strengths and you basically do the self-assessment and we identify the top five. So we identify the top five character strengths that you're working with and how they show up in your work life. Then we go and we do this detailed map of your career, everything from your very first job. We look at everything in your career and you start to see things that repeat. You start to see what was fun and what wasn't fun, what skills did I use, what didn't, and you begin to develop your inventory of transferable skills. So once we have your strengths and once we have your skills, then we can build a message. Then my sales stuff comes in, right? Then we build a sales message that you use in your resume and use in your interviewing and use in all the process. From there, then it's just a matter of rinse and repeat. If you're talking to anybody that's looking for a job right now, you know that very few people are going out and finding one in a week or two. It's months of work. So then it's supporting, continuing to grow, learning how to do kind of customer research. If you've never been in a place where you've been in a selling situation, I tell all my clients that anytime you're looking for a job, you're selling yourself. It's a sales job. You're the product and the company you're trying to go to work for is the customer. And there's one rule. The rule is there's nothing more important to your customer than their customer. So what that means in the work setting is you got to learn how to talk about what's important to them, not just what's important to you, but B, people get so frustrated because they get ghosted and all the situations that are happening, they don't get follow-up and they have to understand that while it's important to them that this job happens and while you're in an interview, they may say, yeah, this is the most important thing. If something happens with their customers, that's going to take priority. So always it's about how do you take your experience? How do you take your strengths and your skills and repackage it so that you can present it to a company and say, this is how I can use this to help you. This is how I've done it in the past. And this is how I can help you with your customers.
Yeah. Are there some things that somebody my age or even Sky's age should really be considering, some things that you maybe learned on this journey that
might be in our blind spot, that maybe that's finances, maybe that's a credit score.
Dude, I'm farther back than that, right? I'm back at, you got to figure out what your strengths are. You got to figure out, you got to accept the reality of where you are, right? And once you accept the reality that you can improve it. So let's accept the reality and then let's build our plan to move forward. And then let's act consistently to get there, right? And I call that the ABCs of change. And that's what I learned as a triathlete, right? I learned that I can't wish that I can't cram for a race, A, and B, I can't wish that it was like it was 5 years ago. And I can't go, I wish it was that way. I wish I still had that strength and that energy. I have to accept the reality of where it is, where I am today. And then I have to build a specific strategy to get where I want to go. And then I have to consistently work that strategy. And I think whether you're 30 or 40 or 50 or 60, and you're trying to sort through your next step, that's the key. And then everything comes together, right? Then it's okay. So like today, I had a conversation with a guy who wanted to increase his income, but his family was really important to him. So it's okay. How do you increase your rate per hour? And so that's where our structure and our conversation was. What are some things that you can do? You've got your strengths. We've gone and looked at your strengths and your skills. What are some different things that you can do that, you know, where you can increase your hourly pay rate, your, so that you can continue to work. His goal was to work 30 hours a week so he could spend time with his children. Okay. If you want to make $150,000 and you're making 50 and you want to do it in the same amount of time, then you've got to increase your hourly rate. So that ties a little bit into, I think, what you asked about, about figuring out that structure. But again, you got to understand the baseline, understand the starting point, and then build a plan and move forward.
You know, the greatest theory that I feel like I have ever come across in the 15 years that I've been studying psychology is radical acceptance. The unacceptance, I think, wishing that, like you said, things were different, is the source of almost all suffering, truly. And it really is the basis of an entire religion of Buddhism. And there's nothing that's changed my life, I think, more than actually radically accepting where we're at.
And so, Sky, the whole vision, my view of your vision,
so
tell me if I'm wrong, is the experience, the life experience that you had with suicide in your life, right?
Yeah.
And or surrounding you, and particularly your cousin?
Yes, yes. Yeah, you're right.
Right. And that's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Right.
It's the ultimate lack of acceptance, right? And again, Ryan can tell that more than anybody on this call, probably. It's a radical lack of acceptance of reality and trying to figure out a way out of a hole. And I think all of us on this call are here to help people know that, as you say, hey, man, it's okay. We can sort through all of this. There's very few permanent mistakes.
When I was going through that really dark period, it was wishing things were different that kept me there. There is this picture. Right. So yeah, I was running these huge nightclubs and it was this crazy, wild, amazing life. One hip really started hurting. I didn't want to even go to the doctor. It took me 6-7 months. That hip was grinding down all the while. I had no idea. Finally go. I'm still working in nightlife. I know I need a hip now. And you give up that life. So one night I'm out at one of the clubs on my crutches. Okay. I'm not going to accept this situation. I fall off my crutches, break my hand. Okay. So now I'm in a wheelchair with a broken hand. And there's this picture of me, one of the Vegas pool clubs. It's 100 degrees outside. I've got 10 girls in bikinis behind me in a wheelchair with a broken arm and a cocktail over here. And a nice, God just pounded me and said, when are you going to run to me? I'm gonna have to give you one more.
Yep.
And it was when I finally accepted my situation. Yeah. I had met with a family friend who was an orthopedic surgeon who was the first one to really give me some cold, hard facts. And I'll never forget when he said, your life is going to be dramatically different and it needs to change. And I didn't want to hear that then, but I think it was at some point, I finally heeded God's call. And that was the greatest thing that I ever did. When I accepted that this was the situation, I'm going to have to find a new career. I'm going to have to do something about that. And I had an amazing group therapist. The only great thing I got out of that treatment center, his name's the Angry Therapist, the big influencer out there. And he really pushed me to apply to grad school. And he told me he'd hire me. And so I figured I had a job when I was out and filled out that application. And life was definitely some bumps in the road along the way, that's for sure.
Right.
And some moments of lacking acceptance as well that kept me stuck in some not so great places. But at some point, once I grasped that concept, and I swear that true radical acceptance is truly my favorite concept. Every client's heard me drill it in their head 100 times. But yeah, it really has some real power when you listen to it.
While I'm not an active person in 12-step recovery, that was such an important part early on, as you probably experienced in your treatment center. It was a big part of the treatment center. And I understand, I think I did it in a very different way. I couldn't own it back then. We've already talked about my relapse and all that. I couldn't own it back then. But as I've looked back at some of that literature, I see that in a very different way. And one of my daily readings is acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. If I'm not accepting it because of a problem in me, right? And I've got to be able to accept it if I'm going to be able to move on and move forward. And I read that every day as I do my journaling and work through my morning routine. So it's a critically important part. Mm-hmm. I will just say there, for those of people who might be listening here who struggle with that dogmatic abstinence element that comes in a 12-step program, if you're trying to do it, what I've learned, again, as part of harm reduction, is we get a new chance every day, and the goal is to get closer and closer. And my view now is that even the founders of AA, the founders of the 12-step programs, what their message really boiled down to wasn't go out and collect 30 years of sobriety. It was about figure out how to get through today. And if you F it up, you start again tomorrow. And if you F it up tomorrow, you start again the next day. And that's the gift. Accept it. Accept it, and then you can build.
It's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. I think so much of us try, and like you said, then fail that night, the next day. And so then we just resign ourselves to that failure a lot of times and accept, on maybe when we shouldn't, the self-destruction or the sabotage, or allow that internal voice to then tell us, we're just stuck in this situation. There's nothing left.
So my favorite phrase of all of this is something that's technically called the abstinence variance effect. And the abstinence variance effect is also known as fuck it, I'm going. And that's the reality, right? If we need to edit that.
No, you're fine.
That's where it is, right? ABE relates to F it, I'm gone, because we can't be perfect. And that's the freedom, that's the challenge, right? That's the challenge that made me say, how did I get here? And then an 8-year road that was not pleasant.
Yeah, we hold that mark so high that we feel we should hit, that then when we don't, we just go, sorry for this one, balls to the wall in the efforts. And that's where a lot of people end up in jail. That's where a lot of people end up, broken relationships. And
We're getting close to the end of our time together today. If you had any parting words for our audience, if there's something that you wished that you could get out there for someone to take forward and move forward in their life, what would those parting words be? And then why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and sign up for your newsletter and all that.
Yeah. So I have 3 things, and I thought about it because I wanted to make sure I had something clear for you guys at the end. And we've talked about a lot of it. Number one, get off your back. You're doing okay. Hey man, it's okay. You're doing okay. Yeah. You might've screwed up, but get off your back and figure out a solution to move forward. No matter how much you screwed up, you can start again. Period. No matter what you've done, no matter how bad you think it is, If you look at it in the daylight and you get somebody to help you, you can start again. And acceptance is the key to change. Those are the three things that I would have you take away with. Because if I knew now what I knew then, that whole story, right? That's if I had been able to actually implement the three things that I just said in 37. And when I was 37 and was had one beer and one beer turned into a lifestyle, things would be really different for me again. So I have a website. It's called Focus. My practice is focusingonresults.com. And so you can go to my website and you can sign up for my newsletter there. I'm really active on LinkedIn still because of my business background. There are multiple Mark Wigginton's, but there's only probably one that's connected to Sky and Ryan. So you'll be able to see that if you want to connect to me there. And I want to make an offer to your audience. We talked about strengths, right? And the strengths questionnaire, if anybody who's listening in your audience today wants to take that strengths questionnaire and just get a quick picture of what their strengths look like, reach out to me. You can email me. My email address is markw@focusingonresults.com. You can go to my website, find me on LinkedIn. Just tell me that you heard about me here on the Hey Man, It's Okay podcast. And I'd love to send you it'd take you 15 minutes to do the self questionnaire. And I'll send you back the results and no cost, no nothing. I'll send the results back to you. And at least you'll get a starting point of what your strengths are.
Awesome. That's really cool, Mark. Thank you for doing that. That's really nice of you.
Thank you.
You guys.
Yeah, Mark. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me. It's so important. I really enjoyed the chat. And again, it's such an important topic. You guys are doing really important work in communicating the message that we can figure our way out.
Yeah. I think you gave me the title for this episode towards the beginning. You said a boomer, a Gen X, and a millennial are on a call. And I think that's
walked into a box. Yeah. A boomer, a Gen X, millennial watching.
Yeah. I think that's so funny. But yeah, thanks for coming on. Thanks for sharing your knowledge and really just being present with us, because that just means it means so much to us. And thanks for listening to all the episodes and the kind words that you said at the beginning. I just really appreciate you being on and being with us.
Awesome. I'm happy to do it.
Thank you so much, Mark.
And thanks, Mark. Does it for us at Hey Man, It's Okay today, guys. Please remember to check out our website, Hey Man, It's Okay. Please remember to like, comment, subscribe. And if you have something you want us to talk about, feel free to email us, sky@heymanitsokay.com. And until next time, from Sky, everybody, it's okay to not be okay. See you next time.
Thank you, everyone. Peace.